Violet Brown driving.
Now, it's time to talk Celtics.
Celtics come roaring out of the gate.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show with Gasper and Murray. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Game on lock for sure.
Smart. We'll trigger the inbound. Lobs it. They go for a quick lob. It's deflected. Jay Crowder comes up with it, and Miami will walk away with game two. Adebayo into the front court. Marcus Smart comes over to give a foul, but there's no reason to because the Miami Heat wrestle game two. Momentum and full control of the Eastern Conference Finals away from the Celtics tonight. They come from 14 down to win game one. They come from 17 down to win game two. And for everything the Celtics have done to get to this point, they're going to have to reinvent the game plan to get back in this series. The Miami Heat are 10-1 in the playoffs, and they are two games away from the NBA Finals. The final score in game two, Miami 106, Boston 101.
Can you talk about what happened in the locker room afterwards?
And really just, you know, a lot of emotions just flying around. Obviously, I feel like we could have won, you know, should have won, and we didn't. So just a lot of emotions flying around. That's it.
Jaylen Brown after the Celtics lose game two to the Miami Heat, 106-101. Welcome into the Sports Hub Celtics Show. Jim Murray, Chris Gasper. You, if you'd like to join us, 617-779-0985. Also have Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, producing the show as always. Chris, I didn't think I'd ever have to use this music bed ever again for that production there. when it came to the Celtics after Kyrie Irving left, but here we are. If you don't know the song, it's from Ice-T. It's a deep cut from 1991's OG Original Gangster. If you know the song, you know why I use it. I can't play the hook in it because FCC regulations. But I use it for a reason. Oh, boy, do I use it for a reason. Not great. This team, Chris, I believed in so much going into that series against Toronto. The way that they whipped up on their first-round series and the way that they were looking, as cohesive as they looked, I said it. I wasn't doing it for like any kind of troll job. I legitimately believed it. Like, this team, given the circumstances, they don't have to travel to places like Milwaukee, Toronto, wherever it happens to be, Miami, wherever. They don't have to travel. In the bubble environment, the Celtics are going to win the championship. And I was all in. Push it all, toot-toot, all aboard the seas train. And just like that, in these two games, I want this team the hell out of my face because not much has changed. Kyrie wasn't as big of a problem as I thought. Oh, he was a problem. That bitchiness there with Kyrie, that was real. But it ain't all him. It ain't all him.
No, it's not.
And that this is rearing its ugly head, and they are showing how they can't deal with adversity the way that they have had. 14-point lead, 17-point lead. The body language in that third quarter, they're getting dunked on time and again by Bam Adebayo. And they get it. That's not just because they don't have a big and they don't have someone in the paint that can deal with him. Chris, they've kind of given up. Like, and then you have this whole thing. We'll talk to Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe, who broke that story and had all that information. He's down there in the bubble, and here's the yelling from Marcus Smart and chairs being thrown. We'll get a little bit more insight there. But that happens after that game, they're front-running frauds. And so who's to blame? Is it Jason Tatum? Is it Jaylen Brown? Is it Marcus Smart? Who's the – if you're going to draw up the old Eddie Edelman blame pie,
yeah,
who gets the biggest piece?
I think for the argument after the game – and not being able to handle losing with some degree of emotional equanimity and emotional maturity, it's Marcus Smart for me. And I said this yesterday on Felger and Maz. He is the longest tenured Celtic. He should be a leader on this team. They've propped him up to be a leader. Nobody plays harder. But he should be a lead by example guy, not a guy that leads with his mouth, because he doesn't have the right degree of emotional maturity or emotional equanimity to really be a leader. You can't come in after a game like that and start in on your teammates, just go in on your teammates and, you know, go into a tirade. And also, the plays he made at the end of that game in the final 2 minutes and 40 seconds, for all the times we talk about he makes winning plays and plays that don't show up on the box score at the end of the game, he made two losing plays. His shot selection was abhorrent in that final 240. The game's tied at 95, I believe it was. He takes like a contested turnaround jumper, like the type of shot that like Kobe Bryant or Jason Tatum or James Harden should be taking. Like, know your role and slow your role. And then they come down against the zone, and it's after Goran Dragic hits that rainbow three that puts Miami up five. The only two guys to touch the ball are Kemba Walker and Marcus Smart, and Smart jacks up a 28-foot three. And that's exactly how long the distance was on it, because I checked the NBA official box score. He jacks up a 28-foot brick. They had 12 turnovers in the second half. He had a third of them. He shot 1 for 6 from the field. So now you're going to start going in on the other guys and complain. Like, I'm done venerating this guy because he plays hard, and that's an excuse for him to behave like a baby after they lose, which he has now done multiple times in his career and twice in these playoffs. He almost started a fracas in a fight after Game 6 of the Toronto series because he couldn't handle losing, and he had to be a baby about it, which he is. I mean, he is a front-running, ref-baiting, flopping, sore loser. That's what he is. That's the other side of all the things that we all love about Marcus Smart, and I think we've reached a point where we have to acknowledge that, and that we have to acknowledge that that other side that the Celtics keep enabling and indulging is exactly why he needs to be a role player on the team and a lead-by-example guy and not the leader. This can't be his team because of that. He's not cut out to be a leader because of that stuff.
I said it to you yesterday. I almost wonder if how well he shot in that series against Toronto, because he kind of turned into Steph Curry at times in that
series.
Yeah,
he was great.
Might have been the worst thing that could have possibly happened, because you know when he's feeling it, he's feeling it. He wants that ball. He wants to take that shot. When he really just needs to focus on being like the defensive stopper on this team and occasionally taking a shot if he's open and having that Dennis Rodman type role. I mean, he's not him, but you know what I mean? Like, he shouldn't focus on trying to be more of an offensive player it's just not his strength. He gets hot. He's a spotty shooter.
Yes,
but he has to know his role, and I don't think that I don't think he's very self aware when it comes to that thing.
No, but it's not just that. Like, that's the basketball part of it, and you know, look, that's frustrating to me too. But even if he made those plays and he handled it differently in the locker room afterwards, I would feel differently about it. But here's the thing. And I feel like this is systemic, and it's something that's intrinsic to this team, and it's a problem I have with the team. And Smart's a big part of the DNA of the team, and it's part of his DNA, and it concerns me. The front-running factor. For example, you make the play of the series against Norman Powell in Game 7 with that block. And after that, everybody on Twitter is talking about how you're the MVP of the series. Now, for me, it was Pascal Siakam. I think he kind of handed you a series, but that's okay. but Marcus Smart's the MVP of the series. It's fine. You're talking about, that's why I'm first team all defense. I bet on myself. You're front and center to take that credit. Now your team, which everybody thinks should win this Eastern Conference Finals, is down 2-0. You're a leader. You had a bad game and you had some bad shots at the end. And you go in on your teammates and storm off and don't talk to the media. To me, that's part of the problem with this team. And I thought the most interesting part of Washburn's column, this isn't Chris Gasper's opinion. This isn't Gary Washburn's opinion. It's not Jim Murray's opinion. In his column, he has the line saying that this confirmed what other teams in the NBA and other NBA personnel think about the Celtics, that they're front runners. Those are NBA. Those are people who play professionally for a living, evaluate professionals and evaluate teams for a living. They look at the Celtics and think there's a front running factor on the team, and that's a problem.
Oh, without question. And I think some of that goes on Jason Tatum too. Like, I don't know, like, and here's the thing, people want to maybe make the counter argument of, well, he's only 22, he doesn't know yet, but now, like, they're young veterans, Chris. They've been this deep in the playoffs before, and they just wilt. Like, I don't know if it's going to get better. I think that that's fair to question that when it comes to guys like Tatum and Brown, given their age, and Smart too. Like, you're young veterans. You've been in this spot before. Will it get better? I don't feel great about it right now. How can I? B-Rob, what have you seen so far in these first couple of games? Brian Robb, Boston Sports Journal, of course, covers the Celtics for bostonsportsjournal.com. Who's most to blame here? Is Chris right what he's saying about Marcus Smart when it comes to his offense and, you know, not shouldering some of that blame there at the end?
I think Chris nailed it with Smart, just not taking accountability there. That was a full team loss, from Brad Stevens to Smart to careless mistakes by Tatum, Brown, all down the board. Kemba, everyone has contributed to the collapses in the first couple games here. And for Smart to kind of come in there and point fingers rather than saying, okay, what do we need to do to fix this, does not look good. And I will say this, though. The Seas have responded really pretty well to adversity this year. And this is obviously the biggest one they're going to face to date, but I think you're going to see a lot of fight that you didn't see in Game 2 or Game 4 against the Raptors tonight. I don't know if it's going to be enough, but I think you can count on that from this team, whereas last year's team not so much.
You blame Coach Stevens in everything that you were saying there, too, and I'm with you. But what is it specifically you blame him for? Is it not being able to solve this 2-3 zone? Is it some of the substitutions hanging on to timeouts? What is it? What is it the most that irks you with Brad Stevens?
Yeah, it's all the above. I think the biggest thing in game two was throwing Cantor in that third quarter when the defense was already coming apart at the seams. That was turned a bad situation even worse. And then, yeah, like when a team is not being able to settle down against offensively against a zone, you need to call timeouts. You need to get them to settle down and or put guys at the top of that zone that can figure it out. That didn't happen in that game. And, you know, it's on the players first, but, you know, Brad has to take some accountability there too, I think.
All right. We'll get to your calls coming up after the following segment. We are going to talk to Gary Washburn, who, of course, had that story after the game two loss to the Miami Heat about the whole blow up in the locker room, people throwing chairs, Marcus Smart screaming at people. We'll get further insight into that and whether or not Gordon Hayward might play tonight in game three. We'll talk to Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe next here on the Sports Hub Celtics Show.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jaylen Brown, and home of the Boston Celtics basketball, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Two times now we've had a couple of double-digit leads, and, you know, we've let go of the ropes. So we got to figure out, you know, why that keeps happening and just be prepared to win the next one. You know, not looking at we got to win 4 out of 5 or 4 out of how many we got left. Just win the next one. Just take it one game at a time.
Jason Tatum after the Celtics game two lost the Miami Heat. Game three tonight. It would help if they could win tonight, one game at a time, right, Jason? Sports Hub Celtics Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper. And joining us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, it's Gary Washburn, who is live from the Orlando bubble. Can you bring him up, E-Rob? I don't know what's going on with my my phone screen right here. It might have just... I think we might have just lost him. Well, Gary is going to be joining us from the Orlando bubble, who was doing great reporting after game two. Was all over the meltdown, the locker room, where Marcus Smart was mostly involved. So obviously some questions we want to ask there. Was Marcus Smart the most involved? Who else had to deal with this? Is this whole thing over? Many questions for Gary, who has been in that Orlando bubble basically since day one. We talked to him months ago, Chris, now, where it... Man, I didn't envy that position. But now, you know, now it's paid off with that kind of reporting.
Yeah, that's why it pays off to, you know, you have newspapers for newspapers to spend money to do that type of journalism. And that's why Gary's there, just a situation like this, to be able to witness stuff firsthand and to be the eyes and the ears for fans and do all that. So, yeah.
All right, Gary, we got you.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, excellent. Thank you. So I know you were standing there listening to everyone melt down in the locker room after game two, and you reported that Marcus Smart was the most vocal, so was it all just him?
Oh, absolutely not, no. When he walked out of the locker room to go to the bathroom, the yelling and the throwing of items continued. So the narrative that Marcus started it all and everybody was coming to him is not true. There were other guys going at each other because the yelling continued. Marcus was in the bathroom for a good 5 minutes. Remember, these are not state-of-the-art arenas, so... The bathroom is outside the locker room. I don't know. We haven't been inside the locker room. We're not allowed because of COVID, obviously. So I don't know what kind of facilities they have inside these locker rooms, okay? They're very basic locker rooms. They're okay for – they look like the Celtics locker room, the visiting locker room at TD Garden, if you've ever been in there. They look like that.
Yep.
So they're decently solid for, you know, but they're not – obviously not state-of-the-art. They don't have all the bells and whistles that – these new ones have, so I don't know what the bathroom was like inside. But Marcus left to go outside, down the hall to the bathroom toward us, and that's what he said, his statement about y'all on that BS. But he was in there 5 minutes, and the yelling didn't stop. There was still yelling. There was still emotions. There was still items being thrown against the wall. So, yeah, to say that it was just Marcus and everybody against Marcus and Marcus against everybody, not true.
So what was the issue and how did it start? Because the understanding is, you know, you're saying it wasn't just Marcus, but it seems like from your reporting that it sort of started with Marcus Smart. So what was the issue that started it from a basketball standpoint and how did it start? What's your understanding of that, Gary?
I can't say like whether Marcus was bad at a particular play, the overall effort, et cetera. I was told he walked into the room and just started airing everybody out, going in on everybody about what the hell's going on here. Guys listened, but then there was Jaylen who said, "Okay, dude, you've done enough. Like it's a team thing. It's everybody's fault. It's not only." And I guess Marcus kind of was like, "Hey, it wasn't only my fault. I know I took a couple of bad shots. However, it's everybody." So he started calling guys out. Guys got tired of hearing Marcus, especially Jalen. Those two had to be separated by some assistant coaches, by some team, some staff. And, you know, that's when Marcus walked out. But the yelling continued once he left. So it was not just Jalen against Marcus. Sure. I just think everybody was kind of airing out their issues, their frustrations. If you really look at it, Jason Tatum didn't seem like a happy man at all in game two. He just didn't seem engaged at all. I mean, if you look at some of his defensive plays, lack of helping, not getting back on that Jimmy Butler steal, he kind of Cadillac'd it a little bit. Then he kind of sped up, and by the time he got there, Butler was laying the ball in. So I think there's just a lot of finger pointing.
And I just want to ask you this because I'm just trying to, you know, get some clarity. I think we're all trying to get some clarity on this. So you're saying Smart comes in there and is sort of airing everybody out and they're listening. And then, you know.
Yeah, Chris, like, honestly, I can't give you everybody wants to know exactly what they were talking about. Like, I don't know if there were particular plays. Was it just the fourth quarter, the third quarter, the Adebayo? I think there was a collective frustration. I think Tice was upset because he didn't get a lot of help on those pick and rolls. I'm not going to do the, you know, TMZ stuff and try to speculate what guys are talking about.
Like, no, I hear what you're saying, Gary. My question just is the way it's sort of being presented, who said something about Smart, about his shots? Was it just him? Because that's the part that I kind of don't understand is that.
I just think Marcus felt like there was some extra blame put on him for some of the plays down the stretch. That turnaround jumper, that three-pointer, I think they were down five. He took like a 28-footer. And I think he kind of said, it's just not me, it's everybody. And he started kind of airing people out. And then Jalen came to him and said, listen, man, we've heard enough. Like, I guess he went on for a little while, and that's where the yelling started. And it was, you know, and that's when Marcus left the room.
Do you think it's over, Gary?
What I was told was basically Brad met with, as Woj first reported, Brad met with the guys late Friday night. Tatum, Walker, Jalen, and Smart. Smart left that meeting abruptly. He did not like what was going on in that meeting. So everything was not settled after that meeting. Kimba facilitated a three-way call. Now, I don't know if it was three-way old school or FaceTime or what. A Zoom call. We facilitated a three-way call with Jalen, Marcus, and him. And those two, and they were able to settle things in that late night 3 a.m. phone call. The next day, they had like an informal voluntary, which you better show up workout, that everybody showed up to, and Brad met with them again. And then things, I think, got to the point of, okay, let's look forward. Let's figure out how to do this. Let's figure out how to beat Miami.
Who's the leader of this team, Gary?
It's really hard to say. I mean, I think there's definitely Kimba's a quiet leader. Jalen's kind of a leader. Marcus is a spiritual leader. You know, and if you really look at Jalen's quotes after the game, he said, I mean, those two had just been separated, and he said he loved Marcus. And I think that there's part of that. I think there's Jalen just like, hey, man, we know you're right, but just be quiet right now. I don't think Jalen was completely disagreeing with Marcus. I don't think he was saying, dude, it's your fault we lost. I think he was saying, we don't need to hear you right now. That's a big difference. So I think Jalen appreciates that passion. I think he wished everybody on the team had that same passion. Do they have a definitive leader? I don't think so. They have several leaders. How well they lead, that's a good question.
Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe joining us here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. Gary, of course, all over the meltdown, the locker room after game two and the loss. How much blame, just from a basketball standpoint, let alone, you know, what's going on with the personalities, Gary, how much blame do you put on Brad Stevens for not being able to figure out the 2-3 zone, maybe some of the substitutions, too much Enes Kanter in game two? What's he need to clean up here?
He deserves a solid amount of the blame. Not making any adjustments to Adebayo. If you got to use Robert Williams, they question Robert Williams' defense on the pick and roll, but he can obviously rim protect. So if you just tell him to stick with Adebayo and not try to guard, you know, they're worried about him getting Dragic on a one-on-one and kind of getting barbecued, you know. But you just might have to take a chance here because I think he's a better option than Cantor. But, yeah, I think Brad deserves a large chunk of the blame for not making those adjustments, not calling a timeout during that run. You know, sometimes not challenging plays where he doesn't want to use his timeout. I mean, you got to kind of go to a second level here. I think we saw in the Toronto series, Nick Nurse went to like a second level, like, okay, I don't think my guys are going to beat their guys just straight up basketball. I'm going to have to challenge things. I'm going to have to muck it up. I'm going to have to come up with some inventive ways to keep my team in this game. The Celtics tonight need to do something to win a game. You know, whether it be Robert Williams, whether it be anyone, you know, who knows how much, if at all, Hayward will play. But they've got to do something different than just, okay, we're going to beat them just like we're doing now. Obviously, that's good enough to get a double-digit lead, but something happens in that second half, something happens in the third quarter of game three, game two, and the fourth quarter of game one, where they're just not themselves. And then that zone is just absolutely stifling them.
And what's the latest you've heard on Gordon Hayward? Do you think he actually plays tonight?
I think it was a good shot. I mean, I'm sure he worked out yesterday. I'm sure he's probably working out right now, and he'll give the team. I think he wants to play. I think the term questionable is a good situation because he was doubtful the other day, and they counted him out before he even got to the arena in game two. So I think there's a good shot he plays.
Do you think Gordon would be playing regardless, like if they were up 2-0, given the schedule? Do you think he'd be playing, Gary, or do you think that the Celtics are saying, hey, you know, this is a guy that can help us bust this zone and help us a little bit with the rotations, and we know Saturday's kind of a must-win game, our season's on the line. Gordon's healthy enough and good enough to go, so we'll put him in.
Yeah, I sort of think he would have played anyway because I think he probably would have played down 0-1 because they did see that as a sense of urgency too. But, yeah, I mean, I do think that there's people looking at Gordon like, okay, man, I mean, it's been a month. You were scheduled to be out for about a month to 5 weeks. What's going on here? And I think he wants to play. I don't think Gordon is just Cadillacing it here or just sitting out because he wants to get fully 100%. I don't think he'll be 100%, but I think he'll be good enough to play.
I just want to ask you, Gary, you know, a lot of people, you tweeted this. I think you made most people sort of aware of this. You mentioned in your tweets, you've covered all sorts of sports for a very long time. Some people are saying like, hey, this was not an out of the ordinary sort of situation. You know, what was your take on I guess, the level of volume coming out of there? And is it something that, you know, is commonplace in the NBA and in pro sports, or was this maybe just a little bit extra?
I said it was the worst I've heard because it was 20 minutes. Like, this was not a 5-minute thing. This was not something, you know, you see in locker rooms, they might be closed for an extra 10 minutes because, you know, something might have happened in there. This was 20 plus minutes. Like, this lasted a long time, to the point where NBA officials outside of the locker room were getting uncomfortable. Like, it was like, what is going on in there? And so this was, I had not seen anything this long. Now, I've seen locker rooms closed or locker rooms not open and guys come out and talk. I have not seen a 20-minute just screaming and yelling and things being thrown for that long of time. It was to the point of, wow, they are really getting something out in there. It could be a lot of things from past games, things that guys have been holding in that he decided to let out, or, you know what, let's put it all on the table now. Let's do this right now as opposed to just keeping it inside.
Oh, great stuff, Gary. Great reporting.
Great, Gary.
And
awesome, it's
got to justify any frustrations you might have been feeling down there, because I can't imagine it's that easy being in the bubble, dealing with the same thing day in, day out, same food and everything else. You had told us what the living conditions are like there, and, you know, they're certainly worse, but I'm sure you have times you're like, oh, God, what am I doing? So, no, that was great, and that has to justify everything what happened there with the reporting the other night. So, great stuff.
Okay, thank you, guys.
All right,
thanks,
Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe joining us here in the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Follow him on Twitter at G Washburn Globe. So Marcus Smart leaves the meeting with the leaders of the team and Brad Stevens too. I hadn't heard that up until now.
Yeah, that's interesting to me. I mean, I think Gary, he was there. He has some perspective. Maybe there are some folks like me putting too much of it on Smart, but I think he's the senior most guy on the team. He's a leader, and it sounds like he stormed off twice. And what's unclear to me, and Gary didn't have the answer there, and I respect that and I understand it, is just from the way it's being described, it's like, who said anything to Smart? It sounds like he came in there and was ripping the team. And then maybe somebody said, hey, man, you know, we all win as a team. We lose as a team. And, you know, you kind of had some shaky shots, too. And then he, like,
really lost it.
Yeah. That's what it sounds like to me. And that's my whole point overall with Smart, is that you got to take the good with the bad. Like, you were the MVP of the Toronto series. You deserved everything you got there in terms of plaudits. Nobody plays harder. You're super competitive. That's great. But there's a lot of dudes who are competitive. And that doesn't mean that you can, you know, light everybody up after a loss, particularly when that's not what the team needs. And it seems like Gary's message was kind of saying that that's what Jaylen Brown's message was, that, okay, we understand and we respect you, but now's like not the time to go in. You know, now's maybe a time where we need a more uplifting message. And I just feel like that's, you know, as a leader, you got to be able to read the room, right? And I don't think he read the room.
Yeah, I don't.
Correctly.
I don't get the feeling that it's over.
I don't either.
The bitchiness and everything going on behind the scenes. The series? Oh, I feel like that's over. I do. I know. Oh, you big Jim Warrior. Oh, yeah, no. I don't know how you can feel good about this, but maybe you do. Let us know. 617-779-0985. It's the Sports Hub Celtics Show here on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Chris Gasper, Jim Murray, The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Questionable is obviously better than doubtful. They counted him out pretty early before game two. It wasn't like he did this pregame workout. They counted him out before he got to the arena in game two. But I think he's close. I do think he's close. Is it worth it to bring him back if you're down 0-3? I don't know about that. So I think Gordon will probably push the play.
Gary Washburn, who just joined us. Gary Washburn, the Boston Globe, had the great reporting after game two about the meltdown in the Celtics locker room. Sports Hub Celtics Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, you, if you'd like to join us at 617-779-0985 on Gordon Hayward. So upgraded to questionable for tonight's game. Does sound like he is going to push to play, that he wants to play. How much of a factor can he actually be in game three tonight, Chris?
I think he could be a big factor in terms of just he helps you space the floor. Even if he's relatively stationary, his ability to knock down outside shots, his ability to make the right pass, might make the right read. I think that's really important. And he's another ball handler, ball mover, which is what I think they need against that zone, which B-Rob, I know it's easy for us to rip the Celtics for not being able to combat it. And I definitely think they can do better. But when I watch Miami play that zone, it's amazing to me, like how in sync the five guys are moving in that zone. It's almost like Syracuse-like.
Yeah, B-Rob, I guess for lack of a better term, we just being dicks because we look at this and be like, you should figure this out in sixth grade. Like, this is so amateur. You know, like, this zone, is it just, are we underrating the fact that, you know, the Miami Heat are playing so cohesively and playing so well that there ain't much they can do about it right now?
I think it's a little bit of both. The Heat, they play more zone than any team in the league. So that, I think, is helping them in this situation, being well-connected there, covering a lot of ground. They also put their really long wings like Butler and Crowder at the top of the zone, which makes things a little tougher to get the passes in the spots you want. But from going back and looking back at it, guys, in the second half, the Celtics just played it terribly. The spacing was terrible. The decision-making was really bad. They were trying to throw passes where they weren't there. So, yeah, like the Celtics, there's a reason why most teams in the NBA don't play a 2-3 zone, because if you're a good offense, you can pick it apart after a few possessions. And the Celtics just never got there in game two, and it could be costing them a series if they don't figure it out in game three.
Is that the way to play Hayward tonight that Chris was just talking about? I mean, if he's going to be on limited minutes, is it just try to, you know, get him so he can hit like a corner three? You know, if he's going to be playing maybe 8-12 minutes, something tops, just, you know, hide him in a corner so he can jack up a shot.
Yeah, and just to keep – he's a versatile threat, Jim, so you can – you throw him in the middle of the zone, too. He's the best mid-range shooter on this team next to Kemba, and he's got the height to shoot over guys like Crowder or Butler there, so that's big. And he will not hold on to the ball. He'll keep it moving. Holding on to the ball killed Smart, Kemba, Tatum at times against the zone, so just getting that ball popping again, attacking the openings, I think that's what he'll be able to bring, even if he isn't hitting his jump shots yet.
Do you worry about him all, B-Rob, on the defensive end? Because, you know, the Celtics have had their issues staying connected, rotations, some of these matchups. And do you think Miami attacks him on the defensive end? I mean, if he doesn't have the same lateral movement and quickness with that ankle, could he be somebody that is a negative for them defensively?
No question. And you know the Heat are going to test that right away. And so maybe you try to hide him on someone like a Crowder to make sure you can. He only has to guard the 3-point line. But if he gets stuck on a Hero or a Duncan Robinson, they're going to run him ragged. And I'm curious to hear what you guys think. Like, you know, last year's storyline of Hayward playing too much, you know, maybe early in the year when he's coming back here, that is brought back to the forefront tonight. Because if he can go, like, how much leeway does Brad Stevens give him in this game?
Well, right. It could also lead to more bitching, right, Chris?
That's a great point, Jim. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, I mean.
Because you had heard in the past that someone related to one of the players thought that he was getting too much playing
time. He was getting
time.
Preferential treatment due to his relationship with Brad.
What was the quote? That's the coach's boy? Or
No, the quote from an unnamed player's family member was, Brad's playing his son again.
Yeah. So, delicate balance with this team. Feels very, very fragile. That's a talent.
Which actually, you know, now that I think about it, I kind of like that quote. Because remember last year when I thought Gordon was playing a little too much and I said Brad was like the little league dad playing his kid. So apparently people, you know, family members of actual players felt the same way.
I just think no matter what, you can't have him in the starting five. And I don't think that he would be, you know, considering the injury, he's going to be on limited minutes. Just have him come off the bench and hopefully he can knock down some shots. Tom in Newton, you're first up here on the Sports Hub Celtics show today. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, hey guys, I just wanted to weigh in on the Celtics and just sort of this, you know, kind of mess the things, you know, this thing's turned into as of late. I mean, I really think that this, as much as anything else, is sort of an indictment on the culture in the NBA, that you're going to have a team that's as talented as the Celtics are, and they are a talented team. They're a good team, and you get in the playoffs and you get up to 17-point leads, and, you know, you're playing a Miami Heat team that's, you know, humble, that's dynamic. I mean, you look at some of the guys on the team, they have no problem passing the ball around six ways from Sunday and doing whatever it takes to win, which is sort of the opposite of what the Celtics have been. I mean, do you think the Heat, when they're down big, are in the locker room slamming chairs, complaining all minutes? No, and it's just frustrating because you look at, you know, Jalen Brown, Jason Tatum, and I mean, I don't know if, you know, Jalen Brown is still counting all the rings that he said he was going to win in that interview, if you remember that. And, I mean, I'm not saying it's everybody, but it just feels like more and more as time goes on, the young guys in the league, just the ego, the minutes, just that whole complex. I mean, maybe it's good for marketing and rumors and everything in the offseason, but it really makes it insufferable to root for your team when you get to here and you're having problems like that. And I just, I don't know, maybe they bring in veterans. I don't know what they do to fix that, but it's just really unfortunate. All right, thanks, guys.
Yeah, Tom, I do think it's kind of an indictment on the league and the young players. And I know, if nothing else, it's given me a perspective change on one of the guys on the other end, and that's Jimmy Butler, who I was never that big of a fan of, Chris, who I was always...
I tried to tell you guys that it was the other guys. And I remember being on Felger and Mads, man, I said in Minnesota, I'm telling you, it's Kat and Wiggins, like, Butler's not the bad guy there.
Yeah, I mean, well, because the national narrative has always been, Jimmy Butler's the problem. Look how many teams Jimmy Butler has gone on and gutted. Turns out, Jimmy Butler wasn't the problem at all. So I want to get into more of that with more of your phone calls. Got a couple open lines you want to join us here and continue to bitch about the Celtics because I have, and I did it the other night after game two. I've declared it over. Like this
it's not over.
Chris, it's over. Like it,
really? Yeah. Why do you feel it's over?
Because of how this team handled themselves.
But didn't it feel like it was over in the second round with Toronto when they went up 2-0? Like all these people were writing about Toronto.
I was never one of them.
Really?
I thought that all that caterwauling and whining, even when they lost and had like a no-show in game four that Saturday night a few weeks ago. I'm like, you people have lost your minds. This team's too talented. They're better than Toronto. Stop it. Okay. Then they blow the double overtime in game six and I was a little like, uh-oh.
No, but I'm sorry. I should have stated that more clearly. A lot of people felt like, oh, the Celtics are definitely going to sweep Toronto when they were up 2-0. People like, this series is over. The Celtics are up 2-0. Toronto can't possibly come back. That's my point.
Oh, no, I never thought it should have gone as far as it did because they had superior talent. They're better team. They are a better team. You know, so I doubted them a little bit as it went along. I didn't think they would lose Game 7. But now, like, it just... I should have been paying, I think, closer attention to how that series devolved after they had the freaky Game 3 loss, the no-show in Game 4. They can't deal with adversity, Chris. They're not built for it. They don't want it. I think there's too much bitching going on, and you saw that blow up in their faces and being reported on by Gary Washburn after Game 2. I think it's a complete mess. They're a mess. They haven't changed all that much from last year, even without Kyrie Irving. And it's driven me crazy because they are more talented than the Heat.
Butler said it. He said they were the more talented team.
But they're no team. The Heat, they're a team. Jimmy Butler, that guy's a man. He's that dude.
And like, he's the unquestioned leader. And I thought that the most interesting response we got from Washburn, well, I was like, who's the leader of this team?
Yeah, they don't know. There's no hierarchy, Chris.
Yeah, exactly.
There's none, and that's maybe the biggest problem. And I don't think that the coach is a leader of men either. So that's why, maybe they'll win tonight. Maybe they push it. It goes seven. It's over. The Heat have won this series. The Celtics don't have it. They don't have what it takes in terms of the intestinal fortitude to get past this team. I think it's over. I do. I think they may win a couple of games here, make it a little more competitive. Hopefully they do. We could use some more stuff to talk about here because the other night when there was literally no sports, because I'm not tuning in the Red Sox at this point, please.
Oh, that game. I actually watched that game last night.
Oh, what is wrong with you? So I do know what it feels like to have that void. It was like we've had this deluge of sports here now for months, thankfully, but with this one night this week, there was nothing on. It's like, oh God. So hopefully they can extend a thing. But for me, yes, I know, Big Jim worry.
I was going to say, this is
the eternal pessimist.
It's Big Jim worry.
Over. It's over. All right. More on Jimmy Butler and your phone calls next.
This is the Sports Hub Celtics Show. This is Jalen Brown and home of the Boston Celtics basketball. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Make
excitement is building for another banner.
Round for three, got it.
The Sports Hub Celtics Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Pass deflected by Butler, tries to save it, and it finds its way to Robinson. Down to Butler, and Butler throws it down. It's back to a one-point game. Great defensive play and hustle from Jimmy Butler.
You did come back from double digits again. What is it about this team that, first of all, you get into that situation in the first place, and then you come back from it?
We like to make it hard on ourselves. We like being down double digits and being a comeback kids. We're still yet to play 48 minutes or maybe more if it goes into overtime. We got to correct it. We got to fix it. And on to the next one.
All right, so besides finding out that the Celtics are front-running frauds so far in this series, or maybe overall, but so far definitely in this series against the Miami Heat, the other epiphany that I've had in watching this, Chris, is that I have been 1,000% wrong on Jimmy Butler and the Heat. I didn't take them seriously enough. They just reminded me so much of, like, the Bridgy Celtics. In fact, they have Bridgy Celtics on this team. Jay Crowder and Kelly Olynyk, who annoy the ever-living hell out of me every time I see them on the floor. But Jimmy Butler, I always thought, was good role player and problematic because the narrative has been for so long that Jimmy Butler is, you know, he's a nice player, but he's too intense and he guts teams. He did it to the Bulls. He did it to the Timberwolves. 76ers didn't want to bring him back for a reason. Jimmy Butler is problematic. By the way, Sports Hub Celtics Show, Jim Murray, Chris Gasper, and I will have something to give away here in this segment. So be listening. Be listening. Be dialing, everyone. I'll get to that in a minute. But Jimmy Butler.
Be dialing, everyone.
Turns out Jimmy Butler was never the problem in any of these places. Everyone else is. The league's the problem. Jimmy Butler, if you're just watching, has an insatiable need to win and stay sucker-free in a league full of suckers and bitches. Like, that's what the problem is. The Bulls, yeah, I've had enough. I'm out. Get me out of here. Timberwolves goes there. The whole thing, read it, I think it's Black Sports Online, like, the whole thing that went on there between him and Karl Anthony Towns. Turns out Karl Anthony Towns, bit of a bitch. Like, that's what the problem was there. 76ers, we know about that team. There's probably a reason. He was like, I'm good. I'll go somewhere else. I'll get paid somewhere else. I want to go to the Miami Heat.
I mean, just Brett Brown alone. Maybe it wasn't necessarily even, maybe he just felt like, oh, you know, this guy doesn't run a tight enough ship for me because he's played for Tibbs. And now he's down there playing for Spoelstra and Riley. He might have, you know, it might not have been as much about Ben Simmons and Embiid, although Embiid is, you know, he's tough.
Man. Yeah, he is tough. So he wanted to go play for an icy cold businessman in Patrick and Pat Riley. And that's what he is. Because Jimmy Butler is an icy cold businessman. Further proof of this, and this is maybe my favorite story of all things going on in the Orlando bubble. Do you know about his whole coffee business, Chris?
I do.
This is just the best, just the absolute best. Jimmy Butler has a coffee hustle in the NBA bubble. This has been going on since those guys went down there. Big Face Coffee. He's actually applied for the trademark of that name, too. So he wants to have this become like a legitimate business. But inside the bubble, he's charging dudes to buy coffee off him. There was a report from, I think it was Rachel Nichols months ago, that more packages, there was this period in time where more packages were sent from Amazon to one area than any other for a couple of weeks stretch, and that was the Orlando bubble because all the NBA players were like, well, I'm bored as hell. I'm going to order PlayStation 4s and Xboxes and espresso machines. So Jimmy Butler gets an espresso machine, starts up his little coffee company in his room in the Orlando bubble, puts out a whiteboard out in front of his room and says, you know, small, medium, large. Lattes, all $20. Small, $20. Medium, $20. Large, $20. Guys knocking on the door. Hey, Jimmy, can I get a small? Yeah, $20. No, seriously. Yeah, $20. Cash only. It says cash only on the sign. hustling dudes for coffee because they got to get that kick in the morning, wherever, you know, after practice, whatever. They need that coffee. He makes these delicious lattes. He's getting that money because the, you know, the players can afford it. But $20, small, medium, or large, baseline, that's the cost. I love it. Icy cold businessman. Shame on me for not taking him and this Heat team more seriously, Chris, because I should have. Because if this is how the Celtics played, oh, I'd be head over heels for them because they do play fundamentally great basketball. They're cohesive. It's not about who's got the touches. Am I getting my shots? They're just there to win. That's it.
Yeah. So this is the part where I have to point out, though, Jim, that you had some of these guys, Olynyk and Crowder, before, and you
oh, not them. You the other guys on the team.
You
that
hated.
I like.
You hated them, Jim.
Yeah. No, I can't stand them. But Butler, okay. Adebayo, how the team is just, you know.
I mean, Adebayo is an all star. He was the guy that worried me the most in this series, and man, I have to
Robinson,
say, like,
Robinson, hero. Those dudes are assassins. Like, those guys are really good shooters. Just like the ball moving and their half court offense. Like, they're fun to watch. I didn't give enough credit. I thought they were kind of like this plucky feel good story, and they're not. They're good.
No, they are good. But the Celtics still have more talent. But you're right, and you said it yesterday on Felger and Maz, and you nailed it. The Heat are a more cohesive operation. They're a better TEAM team, as Bob Ryan would say, or right, and that's the difference. The pieces just fit together better. I mean, Adebayo is an all-star. Butler's an all-star caliber player. I think Goran Dragic is woefully underrated.
Yeah.
You know, he's another sort of all-star caliber guy that a lot of people have slept on and don't know about. But they all like each other. They all play well together. They all complement each other. Nobody's concerned about who's getting the most shine or who's the leader of the team. And then their role guys, like Tyler Hero, who, you know, could have been yours, should have been yours. Riles jumped in and stole him from the Celtics. Those guys really play their roles really well, and they added Andre Iguodala. I know he only got 7 minutes, and Olynyk's kind of doing his thing. And then, you know, Jay Crowder. Jay Crowder seems more content on this team to accept the pecking order than maybe he was on the Celtics teams he was on.
So they don't feel like a rudderless ship full of nonstop bitching like the Celtics do, and that for maybe no other reason is why I say it's over. It's over.
I don't think it's over, but we'll see what happens. I mean, it doesn't look good, obviously.
If they lose tonight, game four, they'll be throwing chairs at each other on the floor.
Yeah, I mean, look, if they lose tonight, it is over. But I think the Celtics can win this series. I still think they're the more talented team. They have the higher ceiling. So they've had big leads in both games. It's just about being able to sort of pull together and pull it together instead of, you know, pulling apart and falling apart, which is obviously what happened after game two. And I'm just sort of curious, like, we've heard so much from Washburn and other people about what happened and yelling with assistant coaches and this, that, and the other. But what do you think Brad Stevens was doing during that time, Jim?
Guys, we can't have this. This is more Adam Jones bit. He does the whole, what's he
called? G. Willikers.
G. Willikers. He even called him the other. I immediately tuned in after game two. I'm like, oh, he's going to be on fire. What did he say at one point? And then you got Willikers after the game that he catches himself. He's like, oh, now I'm calling him Willikers. Love Jones. But yeah, no, that's more Jones bit. But guys, this is the time for calm. Everybody calm down. Put me down, Marcus. Don't throw me like a chair. He really, boy, that is no leader of men. Great X's and O's guy. Maybe a little bit overrated when it comes to the X's and O's. But if nothing else, and this isn't a good sign, I think they've tuned him out, Chris. They've completely tuned out the coach.
I mean, I don't think they've tuned him out, but this is the question.
This is the time for calm. We can't have it.
This is the question we had about him last year, dealing with Kyrie, right? So it's easy when you're dealing with a team where guys have been doubted and disrespected and they're just happy for the playing time. But now when you're on a team with a bunch of guys who are, you know, high lottery picks, and that includes Marcus Smart, who was the number 6 pick, and a guy like Kemba Walker, who, you know, does, I mean, Kemba seems like he's part of the solution, not the problem, but, you know, Kemba has an ego too. Ego's not always a pejorative. It's not a negative. I mean, Kemba's accomplished a lot in the league, but just trying to juggle all those things, that's always been the question about Stevens. Can he do it? And I can't do the voice, but I like to picture him just sort of being like, Marcus, you don't want to mess with me. You don't know, bro. I'm about that life, Marcus. I'm about that life.
You don't think I'm straight? I'm straight.
Gee Willikers, I'm about that life. I don't want to have to hurt you.
Well, like I said, we have a giveaway here on the Sports Hub Celtics show. Why don't you give it away like Don West? Do you remember Don West on the Sports Collectible Show? Be dialing, people. The late night baseball card show.
I do not remember.
You don't remember this?
No,
like 2 in the morning?
No.
Oh, man. Late 90s, early 2000s, coming home, tuning on the TV and just like being just transfixed watching Don West trying to sell you Ken Griffey rookies. We got 100 rookies here. Upper Deck. Michael Jordan, Mr. June special. Be dialing. Call number 10 to the Pride Motor Group contest line at 617-931-0985. Be dialing. You're going to score a Boston Celtics Eastern Conference Finals prize pack. I don't know what that actually contains. Courtesy of the Pro Shop, gear up for the C's run against Miami and shop limited edition playoff merch and green gear now at bostonproshop.com. Be dialing, people. 617-931-0985. Again, you'll score a Boston Celtics Eastern Conference Finals prize pack courtesy of the Pro Shop. Again, go to bostonproshop.com. Caller number 10 will win that, okay? All right, we'll come back. We'll run through your phone calls as it pertains to the Celtics. And again, I think it's over. Got full phone line. Soon as someone drops off, get on with us at 617.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.